And with the best wishes of the Bowers Football Association, we bring you Penalty Spot. Let's say good evening to Paul Mears.
Good evening to you, Larry. Good evening to our listeners, and welcome to another edition of Penalty Spot in association with the Barbados Football Association. Coming up on today's program, former Barbados captain and professional in England, Gregory Lalu Goodridge, is our star player. And in the club corner, we feature Pinelands. We also travel to Porto, Spain for the latest in the ongoing saga between the Trinidad Football Association executive and FIFA. And of course, the latest news from the European leagues with analyst Ronaldo Peewee Jokes. All on this evening's edition of Penalty Spot on Voice of Barbados. Well, good evening once again. And of course, over the past week, the spotlight again has been on whether or not those leagues in Europe will be restarting. And we've been having some action in the Bundesliga in Germany. It's on again, off again in the English Premier League and the La Liga. They've finally set a date for when they will roll out their kickoff of the season. So with all of that information, I'm sure Curtis Hines has been tracking it. Good evening, Curtis.
Good evening to you, Paul. Good evening to Ronaldo as well. Good evening to Larry and all the football fans. Welcome once again to Penalty Spot as we take the usual look at the world of local, regional and international football. Of course, you would have heard the English Premier League got the go-ahead. Well, they're expected to get the go-ahead on Wednesday, prompting hopes to get a concrete date for a return to action. The league has received government approval to progress to the next stage of Project Restart, which is enabling competitive and close contact training, including tackling groups of 12 players. Previously, they would have returned and the players would have been only doing social distance training only, which is basically solo training, jogging, drills, and whatnot. No tackling involved, and a number of the players not really fans of it, but it seems now they're moving to the next stage at this debut of possibly returning in late June. So some more discussions are scheduled for Wednesday, and the clubs will then vote on whether to resume contact training. Of course, there will be some cases where a number of high-profile players have opted not to come back to the clubs and restart the training. Kante from Chelsea is the full support of the club, and he's gone as far as saying that he might be out for the entire season. Of the remainder of the season. Of course, if you know the Kante story, his brother died of a heart-related illness suddenly 3 years ago. Kante himself fainted on the pitch, was subsequently cleared, and they said he had no medical problems. But given his risk pattern in terms of the family, he's erring on the side of caution at this stage, that Kante of Chelsea. In terms of other stuff going on in England, the Union Super League and the women's championship seasons have been ended with immediate effect. So no more women's football coming your way in England anytime this season. And in terms of what would be going on in Spain, it looks like a behind-closed-doors derby between Real Betis and Sevilla. It will start the La Liga season on June 11th. And that's something in Spain. Eagerly looking forward to getting back in action. I believe we can bring in Ronaldo Jokes here. And the other big story out of Spain this week has been Lionel Messi, as he's prone to do, stirring the pot when he's not happy. His latest outburst, if you can call it that, has been aimed at the Barcelona coach. And he's gone on record as saying that Barcelona won't win the Champions League this season. They won't challenge, not if they're playing the kind of football that they are currently playing. As you know, Real currently lead La Liga. They've knocked out of both the cup competitions, however. Messi reportedly unhappy with the current style of play of the Barcelona team, and as we all know what Messi wants, Messi gets. I think that quotes Ronaldo Jules, unless he shapes up as a marked man. Good evening to you once again.
Hi, good evening, gents. Good evening, everybody. The reception again is not that clear, so I didn't hear a lot of what Curtis would have mentioned.
Okay, Lionel Messi.
Oh, that's a little better. Yeah, I can hear you much better.
Yeah, Lionel Messi upset with the coach at the style of football the Barcelona team is playing. He says they stand no chance of winning the Champions League if they continue to play that style of football. The coach has hit back and says, no, we're still in it.
Okay.
But as
that's a bit harsh to state this part of his season. It's kind of uncharacteristic of Messi as well to come out publicly and make statements like that. But to be quite honest, I never thought that Sahin was the coach at the magnitude that Barcelona is accustomed to. But I honestly can't say that Barcelona will or will not win the La Liga. You know, there's always the threat of Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid. But I find those statements a bit un-Messi-like. But hopefully the league gets a kick off sooner rather than later, and we can actually get to see whether or not they do win the league. I know in Italy, as you know, I follow the Italian league pretty closely because of my liking for Juventus.
Yes.
They're likely to start by either the 13th or the 20th. I think the 20th being most likely. I think they came up with a pretty interesting solution to the whole COVID madness. They have adopted, they still want to restart, but they're saying the event, there might be a plan B where there will be a playoff situation. Now, people will be saying, playoffs may not reveal the true nature of the league, but it is the circumstance which we're faced with. And what they have devised is if the teams are 3 points or 3 points are under within distance each other, particularly at the top and the bottom, there will be a one-game playoff. However, if the teams are between 3 to 5 points, the team that has the lesser amount of points, they will need to win in order to finish above the team. So it's an interesting solution, an interesting turn of events as unfolding in Italy. But all in all, I think the league is going to finish. I think the league in question at the moment is the English Premier League. I'm sure Paul is hoping that it resumes to see if he gets one of those European spots.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get one this season. I think he's going to have to wait until next season. But yes, I agree with you, Ronaldo. I think the solution offered by Italy is one that bears perhaps repetition across Europe, where you are determined to have a solution and have a way out. Because don't forget, we're not just looking at the in terms of what will happen for the leagues, but also possibly the Champions League. And these leagues still need to be sorted, hopefully. I don't think we can play past August if we're going to have a September restart of the 2020 season, but it's really a bit chaotic. Of course, the one league up and running, the Bundesliga in Germany. I believe this was the second week of full action since the resumption. Over the weekend, there were wins for Leverkusen, Werder Bremen, Dortmund, and Bayern Munich. At this stage, Ronaldo, looks like a straight fight between Bayern and Dortmund, and the 4 points separation.
I didn't get to see the Dortmund game because I was busy watching Leverkusen. I watched Leverkusen over the weekend, particularly, as you know, our Caribbean connect there, Leon Bailey, he had some recent run-ins with the GFF, so I was watching to see if the media hype and the backlash from the GFF would have played an impact, but he only played about half of those minutes, and he performed quite well. I believe that it's going to come down to, as you said, Dortmund and Munich, the way it's been for probably the last 3 seasons. And coincidentally enough, those two teams play tomorrow. That game plays, I think, might be around 12. That game is going to be title decider. From what I've seen so far, we know Munich in their traditional fashion, all-out attacking, full of quality and pace. They're the decorative team of Germany. But I think that Dortmund, with a younger group, but however still full of quality, the likes of Jadon Sancho, Haaland, Guerrero, and so on, that they stand in a position to upset Bayern Munich. I believe that Dortmund will want to win this particular Bundesliga for the mere fact that they're trying to convince players to say, you hear rumors around Sancho, you hear rumors even around Haaland So they will want to retain these players, and the best way to do it is to show everybody that they could beat the best team, or arguably the best team in Germany.
Indeed. So the best young players in the world, Sancho and Haaland, both linked with moves away from the club, having not really spent that much time there. But who knows what's going to happen in the world of football. Speaking of transfer, Odion Ighalo is likely to return to China, I should say, with Shanghai Shenhua, after Manchester United appeared to be struggling to get his loan deal continued. The 30-year-old was signed, as you remember, for short as a cover for Marcus Rashford, and seems to have had a great impact. But the Chinese club is now saying no dicey word to player back, and Manchester United seems to be in a spot of bother there because they were keen to extend the loan. But that is the nature of loan agreements. In France, the Lyon president has called for the French prime minister to reconsider the termination of the season. Good luck with that. I don't think it's going to happen because they want to.
If I may add, where you mentioned the Ighalo loan, I think that is one of the repercussions of having the league run so long. As you know, a number of guys would have had contracts that are coming to an end.
Correct.
And if the season prolongs well beyond the usually expected May 30th closing, how do those players then play in June? How do they play in July out of contract? Like, what kinds of legal steps have to be taken, and what kind of red tape you have to jump over? And I think that's something that agents are looking closely into, and also the financial heads of each of these clubs. If the season does go into July and August, they got to consider those persons whose contracts are running out at the end of the season.
Indeed, because what happens if you, like you said, you're playing July, August, and you get an injury, who's liable? The current club is out of contract. He may have attracted interest from another club. They will not take the medical brunt of the treatment. So it's always going to be problematic. And speaking of injuries, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the AC Milan veteran striker, has had what appears to be a serious calf injury. Reports are that he has perhaps torn the ligament. And if that's the case, it could be career-threatening, because at 39 years old, he would have to question his desire to fight back from surgery and rehab, given already it's been a problematic season. So this season would be over for sure. But would he come back for another season at age 40?
This is, I didn't hear that last part. Who was the player?
Zlatan.
I think Zlatan
seems to have torn a ligament in the calf.
I think that he can hang his boots, man. He's impacted in every league that he's ever played in. We all know the quality of the guy. I don't think there's anything left to prove. I just think it'll be a matter of if Zlatan wants to play. But if he does recover from this calf injury, I don't think any of the major teams in Europe are going to go after him. Maybe returning to Sweden and playing with his boyhood club Malmo, that might be best bet. But I don't think that Zlatan, at this age, as you rightfully mentioned, and this stage of his career, that he'll come back and be close to what we're accustomed to. You know, we've seen some goals that actually match his ego. So I don't think that he'll be coming back, unfortunately, for Milan.
And finally, on the international scene, Barcelona apparently willing to listen to offers for Ousmane Dembele and Felipe Coutinho. They both want the players to go out possibly on loan, neither living up to the hype at Barcelona. And of course, the team, in for a bit of a rejig, all centers around Lionel Messi. Luis Suarez, at surgery, was under some injury clouds as well. And I think this, Ronaldo, is where the Barcelona season has really, I don't want to say unraveled, but it's not hit the heights this season. The over-dependence, even more so
support
than usual, on Messi.
Yeah, I think Barcelona, I mean, they have always flourished on the back of the goals of Lionel Messi, but the supporting cast has always been,
adequate.
Part of some of the best players from the time they had Xavi and Iniesta to support Messi. Then after that, you had Suarez and Neymar. I just think after that, there was no one really to compliment what Messi brings to the table. Coutinho and Dembele, I think Dembele, the injury bug has never really left him alone. Coutinho, since his return, he's came over from Anfield, has been inconsistent. I believe if they offload these two key attacking players, maybe it would open up some space on the roster and also in the bank book for Lautaro Martinez, who's at Inter, who they've been chasing probably from since the end of last year. They've not made it any secret their admiration for Martinez, how much they think that he'll be an ear for Suarez. So maybe clearing these two guys off of the books could open up the pathway for Martinez to arrive.
Okay, thanks very much, Ronaldo. PV Jokes, as we take a look at the international end of what's going on in football on the penalty spot as we continue compliments to BFA. Of course, we're still taking your calls. You can get your emails in. Got a WhatsApp moments ago. Any update, guys, on the start of the BFA season? No, not as yet. We are still awaiting word from government. That decision will hinge on what is then at the top level. And, of course, as yet, no word on football. We've seen the resumption of some sport where it is possible. Golf has gotten the nod. Well, tennis has gotten the nod. Nothing on football as yet. Of course, football, contact sport, team sport as well. That's going to be a bit further down the line, Paul, before we can have the go-ahead for that. But fingers crossed we can still get some more football in this season.
Yeah, one thing for sure, Curtis, seems like the local football fans missing the Premier League for sure. We've been getting questions every week, basically, as to when, if we will get some kind of action here in Barbados. I'm sure you're missing that Sunday night football, Curtis.
Players as well, missing it badly. I can tell you since the lockdown, I've gone for one ball, bought a replacement, and I can already see the marks on the wall already. Football definitely needs to restart very, very soon.
Okay, well, we're going to move to one of our special segments that we have started in our penalty spot program, the Club Corner. We've been going across the country. As you can hear, Douglas said, Lucy, we're going to bring it a little closer home. And this evening, we're going to feature the Pinelands Football Club. And joining us to talk a little bit about the Pinelands and football, none other than Hamilton Lashley. Good evening, Hammy.
Hello, good evening, Paul.
How have you been doing, my friend?
Well, for this couple of weeks, I have been sitting on the dock of the bay.
Have you been getting in your morning walks?
Oh, yes, earlier mornings. I've switched to the yard since the weather now from 9 o'clock to an hour to 10 o'clock in the off-sun, you know. The vitamin C is good for the soul.
Man, you're doing more walking than Curtis.
Yeah? I know Curtis is a fit man, right?
You're sure you want to put your head on the block to that one?
No, I will not. Not in this COVID time.
Badgering the witness, Paul.
Well, let's go to Pinelands, and this evening we are featuring the Pinelands Football Club. When we think about Pinelands football, there's some, you know, I know you're going to take me right back and at the early influences and so on. But when we think about Pinelands, there are some names that automatically would come to mind: Colin Potato Ford, playing at the youth and senior national level. Bob Ford is a top referee, and you know, lots of players have come through the years and made it a kind of a special place for football. So I want to take you right back. Let's talk a little bit about the early years, Hammy.
Well, yeah, sure, Paul. But to clearly understand Pinelands from the outset, it is set against their background. Then that community, because Pinelands is really a community-based team. Then the term Pinelands just stigmatized and masquerades as a community. There's nothing that is expected to come out. Of course, it was further stigmatized by the three P's: P for Perry, P for the bank, and P for prison. But, you know, communities got their own rhythm. They got their own programs and policies. But a group of people in those early days came together and formed, even before Pinelands, there was a very good football team called West Ham Regents. And that West Ham Regents would have had players like Radcliffe Morris, John Cook. Collymore were captained by the late Sylvester Brown. It would have had in Lil Trevor. It would have had in Ryan Bisford. It would have had some very good, very good players. Cuthbert, Cathy Francis, Mr. Neblet, you'd be calling Snow. There, even Pearson, Canada had a little piece of that very deep that we call the Vassal region. But interestingly, what happened, the players of that day then determined they would go down to Barclays. Barclays was a far more pleasant turf to play on. They joined Barclays because Barclays had a team in the BFA League at the time. And they were pretty successful in playing with Barclays. In fact, they assisted Barclays to win a couple of trophies. In fact, the president of the Barbados Cricket Association, Condé O'Reilly, he was also paid for Barclays at the time. I don't think many Barbadians know that Condé O'Reilly was a footballer of sorts. The Gatsby was not, but a footballer of sorts. But then what happened? The formation of finance came primarily through the work of the late Wayne Posilico, who came over from Benfica, Cuthbert Cathy Francis, who also came over from Benfica, because you've got to remember Benfica was playing the top league at the time before finals. And then Mr. Morris Turney, then we had Trevor Mears. His sister, Sandra, became one of the first female coaches of our junior team. But then you also had Orville Manning. These were the persons who started playing. You had Raymond Francis, Cathy Brennan. Then you had also Ian Bisford, Andy Doherty Highland. And of course, those were the early the persons that started playing. We had Ram Balgobe as one of our first coaches and inspiring individuals in those early days. When finals first played, interestingly enough, finals began their first suits in the BFA in 1977. And Paul, this is a very interesting chronicle of events that took place from 1977 to the present period of time. And, of course, in 1977, finals began by playing fourth division. They won that in their first year in first division. They won the first division cup. And then in the knockout, they won the first division. They won the fourth division cup and also the league of the of that fourth division. Then there was a league called the Chrissie Smith League that they also went in that final, and they were beaten 5-1 by Calder. Got in the league final of the fourth division that were beaten 6-1 by Notre Dame, but they won that cup. They won the fourth division, and then the following year, in 1978, they won the third division. So that is two cups in 2 years. So they went to the third division. Then they didn't win in 1979, but went on in 1980 and won the second division trophy. So in 4 years, they moved right up to the second division. Now, in 1980, they reached the finals of the knockout, losing to Everton 3-1. But in that, one must remember too that when finals lost to Carlton at Notre Dame that year, there were four division teams that climbed right up to play against the Division 2, 3, and 1st Division teams. One of finals casualties to that finals was Weymouth Wales, the mighty Weymouth Wales. And, of course, that set the tone for finals' future performance going ahead. Now, what was also interesting is 1980s brought in what they call a tremendous year of achievement for finals. For instance, in 1980, they won the FICO. They won the FICO finals, and that brought a lot brought the joy to the committee, to the community, the people in the play were ecstatic. They were jumping, enjoying, had a sense of resurgence, a sense of renewal, a sense of community. And Pilots started to bond together primarily through the outstanding performances of this football team on the field of play. Now, in 1982, three teams tied at the top of the BFA standings: YMCA, Lille, and Pilots. YMCA was eventually awarded by goal difference of one goal. So we consider ourselves in 1982 that we would have done well, and we had a lot to celebrate in the finals. Now, in 1983, Finals won the BFA League again. That is the League Cup. In 1984, they lost to Wales. You know, Wales was the dominant team. Wales was the star team of that era. But we lost to Wales in the Islandwide final at the National Stadium.
At that point, where the team would have
booked to my SDM Christmas, but of course not having the money to pay for the accommodation. So everybody was panicking. You know, I mean, what are we going to do now? So when we came out of JFK Airport, more than 150 people from the Pine were at the airport waiting to welcome Pineland to New York. What happened is history after that. The guys were put up at various homes as forced people from the Pine for the 2 weeks where we were there. In the Caribbean, we took on Haiti, we took on St. Vincent, we took on Trinidad and Tobago, we took on Guyana, and we took on Jamaica. We beat all of those teams and played Jamaica in the finals and beat Jamaica. We beat Jamaica 2-1. And there, because at that time, Stokes and Pineland had sponsored Pineland. And Pineland, of course, through Mr. De Silva efforts, we were known then as Ovaltine Pineland. And you know what, Paul and Curtis? The people in Brooklyn, the Brooklynites, they renamed that bar Ovaltine Bar. We came out to a tremendous celebration of about 500 people on a long, long road dancing, rejoicing. That was memory. That is when you had the likes of the dazzling Colin Potato Ford, Derek Billy Early. We had in the bank Bismarck, even Anthony Anderson. We also had B&E, Ben O'Neill, Michael Hayward. The two of them could have to spin on a dime and create the most sensational players. We had the magic Ricardo Froggy Grenade in bars. We had Mike Seal up there on tour. I mean, we had a fantastic team, a dozen of real skills and talent that brought joy and pride to the finance community.
Wonderful history there.
It was celebration right through, boss.
Yeah, wonderful history there, Hammy.
Huh?
Wonderful history there of the Pinelands team. We have one more minute left. How do you see the future for Pinelands football?
Well, to remember all the accomplishments and the feats of Pinelands, it must be immortalized in soccer history. And we are creating the Pinelands Soccer Hall of Fame called a Galaxy of stars, where all of the Pinelands players, every one of them that would have represented this community at the national level, the international level, and also at the various tournaments, will be inducted into the Pinelands Soccer Hall of Fame just as soon as we get we given the all clear that we can move around and have that first function at the Parkinson Community Center in the Pine. Of course, the team is rebuilding at the moment through the efforts of Bob Murray, Fernando Best, but of course we had Carson Boyd and a number of other coaches that contributed. Sachs, we cannot forget Sachs Forrest, Michael Sachs Forrest. What was the persons would have contributed to the development and success. Too numerous to call at this moment. But of course, Paul, I'm hoping that you will invite us back to do part two.
For sure, Javi. Thank you very much for joining us. I really sat back and enjoyed listening to the success of the Pinelands team through the years. 1980s, early 90s seem to be the glory years for Pinelands. So once again, thank you very much, Javi, and all the best.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Thank you, Hammy La, looking at the Pinelands Football Club, our team featured in the club corner on this evening's Penalty Spot. Just to remind you, you're listening to Penalty Spot on Voice of Barbados, all of this in association with the Barbados Football Association. We're going to travel quickly over to Trinidad and Tobago. We have on the line with us Keith Clement of the Guardian newspaper. Good evening to you, Keith.
Good evening, and how are you?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
I'm good.
Well, since we last spoke, a lot has happened in Trinidad in relation to that matter with the former TTFA, the executive, William Wallace and his team, and Normalization Committee / FIFA. So bring us up to date on what has been the latest development.
Well, the latest development is that the TTFA members, the former executive, they have moved the matter from arbitration at CAF. They have now taken it to the High Court here in Tobago. I believe that that the FIFA's going to be, should respond to them sometime this week, because today's a holiday in Trinidad. But they are hoping, the TTFA members, that is Mr. William Morris and his team, they are hoping that the court here in Trinidad and Tobago going to provide some level of justice, some level of satisfaction to them.
This next, this latest move that you mentioned, the having dropped the issue and taken it to the Court of Arbitration in Switzerland and bringing it back to the TNT High Court. I mean, from hearing the analysts and so on in Trinidad, how you know do you expect this particular move to let's say to play out?
Well, to start with, those former members believe that the Court of Arbitration in Switzerland was biased towards the FIFA, and they believe that coming here in Trinidad, they would get perhaps, as I said before, more justice. But this is more tricky than before because, remember, FIFA do not believe in you taking a matter to your local court. That is in the FIFA statutes and is also scribed in the Trinidad Tobago Football Association Constitution, in which members are debarred from going to the court to seek justice. So what we have to wait and see is what FIFA do exactly. FIFA is the main player here because FIFA can well decide we're not subscribing to you going to your court in Trinidad Tobago and ban either all the members who have done that. So far, 6 members to date because Chief LaCroix, the former chairman of the technical committee, has now joined them in that, and Mr. Anthony Hafford, who was earmarked to be their marketing manager. So it's now 6 of them. So FIFA now can do one of 3 things. Respond to the court order, ban those 6 members, or ban Trinidad and Tobago. It's one of 3 things could happen from this point on.
Is Trinidad football headed for a ban?
If FIFA say true to form, so to speak, I think the members will be banned before FIFA banned the FA itself. Because what some clubs are saying all represent in associations and all of that is you guys didn't come to us and ask us what we think. You want to see if you want to take this matter to court. And a member of our local federation here cannot go to the court before they go to CAF for any matter. So basically, to them, what is the message that these high-level executive members are setting for the future? No, we have previous matters that went to court, but those were on different grounds because the TTFA is the one who challenged them in court on the matter.
The other issue that I saw coming out of Trinidad in relation to that, the normalization committee met, as I read, with the former coach who had taken action to kind of get back the money that is owed to him. That seemed to have quelled that situation just a bit, that meeting with the normalization committee.
Yes, so he was taking action against the TTFA. In fact, the intent was to levy on the TTFA this week here. Right? But the mere fact that the normalization committee reached out to him, his lawyers have said that, look, we are going to talk with you all and see if we can reach a settlement before we think about levying on the TTFA. So we are waiting to see that. I think we should meet sometime this week to start perhaps putting plans in place. But all of this is more confusion because of the fact that this matter has now gone to court. Where does this leave the whole situation? But from FIFA point of view, the normalization committee is the committee that is running and managing the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association and all matters and concerns that coaches and anyone else want to bring to them, they have to go to the normalization committee to settle these matters.
One final question to you, Keith. When can we expect a judgment from the High Court?
Well, we don't know how FIFA is going to respond to this, because we don't know if FIFA is going to just respond via email to the court and then have a date set, or whether FIFA not going to respond at all. And this matter not going to solve anytime soon. I'm not seeing this matter solving anytime soon whatsoever. So which means our football here in San Tobago is set to be in limbo for maybe for the rest of this year.
Well, Keith Clement of the Guardian newspaper in Trinidad, we want to thank you very much for joining us and updating us on that ongoing situation there in Trinidad and Tobago. Thanks again for joining us on Penalty Spot.
You're most welcome.
And welcome back to Penalty Spot. Curtis, that situation in Trinidad continued to develop. We have a little bit of telephone issues there. Coming through from Trinidad wasn't as clear as we thought, but we thought that issue is important enough that we should really had to delve into it. Shortly, we'll be going to our final segment. As usual, every evening, we are having our player profile. We've had quite a few standing players so far, and this evening will be no different. This evening we'll be featuring Gregory Lalu Goodrich, one of the best players ever produced by this country, with a really
indeed, excellent Paul, record. I've got Lalu on the line there with you right now.
Well, good evening to you, Lalu.
Hello, good evening, Paul. Good evening to the listeners.
Wonderful to hear you, and as our player we're featuring this evening, we're going to take you way back, Lalu, from the early days and bring you forward as we try to look at your career over the next 15 minutes or so. And I remember those early years and you going into the professional league and so on, playing for Lambada, Torquay, Queen's Park Rangers, Bristol City. Of course, at home, Ellerton, Britain Still, Rendezvous. Quite a record, Lalu. But let's go back to the early days. How did it all start for you in football?
Well, it all started in Ellerton, where, you know, everybody knows my hometown. Playing for Malvern in the second division. 15 years old, I was still at St. George Secondary School. I was called to play for the combined schools, but I refused to play for the combined schools because I wanted to play with my home team, which is Malvern, with the players of my uncle Hamilton Goodrich and Phil Braffitt, and that type of players that I came up watching play. I wanted to play with them before they passed out. So happily to get the chance and enjoy the career at Malvern.
From Malvern, where did it go from there?
Well, after Malvern, I leave from Malvern, I went to Britain's Hill, which that was in 1990. To try to see if I could have get a national player, because all along you used to hear the country players never get a chance as long as they live in the country, so you got to go into town to get to play for your country. So I take the chance, went over to British Hill, succeeded, making the team, We won the first division at the time, the whole first division, for the first time up. And then from there, everything went smooth in a certain way, because I also was selected to the national team as well.
Okay, Lalu, tell us some more about the first couple of games in the national team setup. You would have achieved your goal to get into the national team, and as you said, from there, it went pretty smoothly.
Yeah, when I was called in the national team, the type of player, the caliber of player that was in the national team was, a head hitter. Because at that time, I was a midfielder, and going into the team was to come up against people like Adrian Hall, Colin Potato Ford, and Anthony Daisy Clark in the midfield. I know sometime I had to get a chance. I had to sit down and wait, and so I did. Yeah, I was given an opportunity against Suriname to play at home, and after that, I never looked back.
And of course, when we think Gregory Lalu Goodrich, we think of the stint overseas, in particular, first Barbadian player to play in the English Premiership. A feat which has not been equal up to now. Take us back to the Premier League days, the days in European football.
From there, when I leave Bernicello, after Bernicello, I went into the BDS Sports Program. Then I came out to the BDS Sports Program and back to Bernicello for the second spell. And then I was offered a chance to go to trials within Kevin Miller, was the coach in the national team and the BDS sports program at the time. So then he told me he had a trial set up for me in England. So he asked me if I'm interested. I said, yes, I'm interested, because it's a dream of any footballer who would like to play professional football. So I went over to Devon. Very, very, very cold December next to the seaside in England. And I'm doing the 2 weeks. I had a 2 week trial. And during the 2 weeks, within the first week, we had some couple games against the first team because I was playing in the reserve team. And the things I've done playing for the reserve, I was offered the contract. And that was the stepping stone from there. Then after the first year at Torquay, I was at home pre-season when Barbados played Aston Villa and Queen's Park Rangers at home. From my opinion, I had a very quiet games against Aston Villa and Queen's Park Rangers here. But when I went back to England then, I saw a lot of journalists outside my apartment where I was staying at the time. So I wondered if someone had passed away from inside the apartment. So I saw the chairman and the manager at the time, and then they said, Queen's Park Rangers made a bid for me. And they're thinking about it. And they asked me, what do I think? And they said, at that point in time, I didn't want to leave. And they said, don't sell me yet. So then the chairman said to me, it's not all about you, it's the business. So it's an opportunity for you and an opportunity for the club to progress. And then from there, I went to Queen's Park Rangers, wishing to go and play in the English Premier League. It was, as I said again, another opportunity and a lifetime. Going playing the likes of Trevor St. Clair and David Barr, these people that you see every day playing for England. I've been learning the trade along them as well. I had 9 appearances, and I scored 1 goal, but so far I've enjoyed it in the Premier League.
Was it a big step up in terms of quality when you went to Queen's Park Rangers?
Pardon?
Was it a big step up in terms of quality when you finally made it to the Premier League?
Yeah, so as I said, it's a big step. It had to be a big step because you played against the English Premier League, playing against the likes of Brian Roy and Alan Shearer, those type of players. So you know that's a big step. The training was different, was harder. You know, you had to be spot on in training in order to get selected for the first team, because as I said, it was not an easy first team to pick, and there was one of the big teams at that point in time in the English Premier League.
Indeed, and after that stint, tell us about what is still our most successful World Cup qualifying run from the Barbados standpoint, under the coach Tobacco Beckles, the likes of yourself, Llewellyn Riley, a young Norman Ford, everyone perhaps in the, if not the peak, just getting to the peak of their careers. It was really some exciting times for Barbados football.
Yes, at every given time, as everyone knows, I'm being called upon to select my play for my country. I'm always willing to come and give 100%. But that particular time, we had that run. It was a great run. We enjoyed it. We could have gone further and done much better, but, you know, unfortunately, the teams was much better, stronger. They had more overseas-based players. We just had one professional player at that point in time. And then we gradually started to get a couple of other players from outside, which didn't gel properly then. And after the Costa Rica home win at home, which I felt we could have done much better, but unfortunately, we slipped right back down to the end. But it was a great run.
Well, a little more recently in the Premiership, you would have had some spins back, as you would know, with Britain Sill, Ellerton, and of course, Rendezvous, who took the Premier League by storm. In terms of that that segment of your play, the last 10 years or so, which of those clubs would you have enjoyed the most?
Well, I always got to say my best spell would have been when I was at Britain Sill. Because you know, majority of my titles I've won in Barbados came playing for Britain Sill. And as at that point in time, when I won all these titles as well, I was a player coach as well. So we won the Premier League, the Knockout, and the Super 8 at the time. And the whole second division as well. So I would say that was my, you know, best spell, really, in the football in Barbados.
You mentioned being player coach, and yes, I remember those days very, very well. Playing some Masters now as well, still have all the talent. If less, a little less speed, but the talent and skill still there. Any ambition towards the... I see you've been playing now some Masters football. You mentioned you performed a player coach role before. Any aspirations towards becoming perhaps a full-time coach? Or that is not something that you really want to head in that direction?
Yes, sometime down the line, yes, I was thinking about being a full-time coach. I mean, it would always be good to come and give back to your community or to all the youngsters in Barbados.
We always have the comparisons, this era versus the early 2000s, this era versus the 90s and the 80s. What would you say is the difference? How would this current batch of Premier League players compared with some of the guys you would have played with and against before?
Got a lot of talent, a lot of players, a lot of ability, and there's some with a lot of heart, but there's some that know that they can do better, but they just don't really give their all. So then when the time is really ready for them to step up and show what they can do, it's too late. So I think there's too lackadaisical. And they need more encouragement. I mean, they got to push themselves. If they don't push themselves, nobody else will push them. Because at the end of the day, you can only get what you put in. What you put in, you get out.
So the way you see it, it's more of an attitude issue then than talent?
Yes, because in my time of playing in the English Premier League and it's the First Division, all the divisions in England which I've played in, the players there, overseas, they're not better than half of the players that we have here, but they have the heart and they want to win and they'll give their all.
If you had to pick a Premier League player at this stage, who would be your Premier League player of choice?
At the present moment, I've got three favourite players in the Premier League. One would be Rashad Jules from the BDF.
Yeah.
Shaqi Bell from Ellerton, and Rashawn Baffitt from Ellerton as well.
Of course, I know you still hold Ellerton dear to your heart. We spoke to the manager last week, Corey Barrow.
Yeah.
Ellerton, I think George scored some nice goals over there as well. And of course, I'm sure he would want to give back to the club at some stage.
Yes, I was there. I had a short spell there. I think it was about 3 seasons ago. And I'm playing as well, helping out. Somewhere down the line, I just not lose interest in playing the Premier League, but I wasn't feeling, you know, to go and give it my all every night in training, and so I decided to just play the Masters.
Okay. Well, I know we've heard over the last 4 weeks or so the discussion about a possible Caribbean Professional League. I'm sure this is something that, had it been around back in your day, you would have looked forward to.
Yes, of course. Anything with semi-professional or being professional, any young footballer should always, you know, try their utmost best to get towards that start, because it's a stepping stone of going further into the professional league.
And finally, Lalu, someone is prompting me in the background via the text message to get a word on your beloved Liverpool team. Premier League about to resume, hopefully, and that Premiership title is pretty much nailed on.
No one has ever done.
I think I'm losing him a bit there. But that was,
of course, 25 points clear. We have done things that no other club's ever done. And
we
go further and further all the time. We never walk alone.
Of course, never walk alone. That's Gregory Lalu, good respect. Lalu, nice to hear you as per usual. I hope to see you back at the turf very, very soon.
I'm hoping to see you all soon as well. Thanks.
That's the voice of Gregory Lalu Goodridge, our star player on this evening's penalty spot, and what a career he's had. Now, back in 1992 with Lambada, went on to Torquay United, Queen's Park Rangers. He had a stint at Bristol City, on loan to Cheltenham Town, then back at Torquay United, and of course all his local teams, as he mentioned, Ellerton and Rendezvous, and over 60 games for the national team. And we really want to salute him as one of the outstanding footballers produced by this country. So that has been our program for today. Of course, next week we'll have another star player for you. And of course, in our club corner, we'll be featuring another one of the clubs in Barbados, and to keep you updated on all that's happening across the European leagues, where the action has gotten underway in the Bundesliga and England and the La Liga promising to get started soon. That has been Penalty Spot on behalf of Curtis Sines. Wishing you a wonderful evening. And of course, join us again next week, 6:15, for another edition.